KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor for the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, The Jazz Loft, according to W. Eugene Smith, showing Friday, November 4th at 7 p.m. In the 1950s, dozens of jazz musicians jam night after night in New York loft buildings, including Thelonious Monk and Ronnie Free, not realizing they are being captured in sound and picture by Life magazine photographer W. Eugene Smith, who lives in the loft space next door. Again, that's The Jazz Loft, according to W. Eugene Smith, showing Friday, November 4th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Like many of you, I've been watching live streaming video over the last week from the water protectors at Standing Rock in North Dakota as they attempt to stop the sludge pipeline that was rerouted through their territory after being rejected from passing through white communities. I want to point out that this is white supremacy in action. Looks like white supremacy because it is. I've watched the white corporation defenders attacked with armored cars, chemical weapons like tear gas and pepper spray, rubber-coated steel bullets, lead pellets, and nylon bags called beanbag rounds from shotguns, sonic weaponry from an LRAD device, and of course the traditional cruel baton beatings. Against this, I have witnessed an incredible bravery and determination as unarmed indigenous defenders and their allies stand their ground again and again with their bodies. Today on Democracy Now!, the water defenders could be seen even swimming into a muddy creek to stop the oil industry onslaught. I'll have more on this situation later in the broadcast, if I have time. Now to other headline news. From Radio Havana, Cuba, the International Criminal Court is preparing to launch an investigation of a range of possible war crimes in Afghanistan, including those committed by U.S. troops. According to a new report, ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda will seek to initiate an investigation in the coming weeks, according to the Foreign Policy magazine. Citing several knowledgeable sources, the probe will likely be launched after the U.S. presidential elections, but before the end of the year. However, it's not clear whether the ICC would ever bring charges against Americans after the investigation, because doing so would require significantly more evidence than the Chief Prosecutor's Office currently possesses, the report said. If indeed launched, the move would mark the first time a formal ICC investigation has scrutinized U.S. crimes. In order to discuss the potential investigation and to express concerns about its scope, U.S. officials recently visited the ICC, an international tribunal that sits in The Hague in the Netherlands. The ICC has repeatedly highlighted alleged abuses of detainees by American troops between 2003 and 2005 that it believes have not been adequately addressed by the U.S. government. Quoting the tribunal, in a report from last year, Crimes were allegedly committed with particular cruelty and in a manner that debased the basic human dignity of the victims, end quote. The U.S. government has insisted that the ICC does not have jurisdiction over U.S. citizens because Washington never ratified the Rome Statute that established the court in the first place. Afghanistan, Radio Havana writes, is still suffering from insecurity and violence years after the United States and its allies invaded the country in 2001 as part of Washington's so-called War on Terror. In October last year, President Barack Obama announced plans to keep 9,800 U.S. troops in Afghanistan through 2006 and 5,500 in 2017, reneging on his promise to end the war there and bring home most American forces from the Asian country before he leaves office. Now I want to talk about the election. I know many people have said that we'll all be glad when it's over, but I think it's telling us something about ourselves. Oh, and come to think of it, now that I've mentioned white supremacy, I want to dial down on that a little bit. I've been trying to emphasize Black Lives Matter on this show over the last year or so, and the indigenous fight against the encroachment on their territory, and against global warming, that's another story, has brought up white supremacy. And I want to talk about whiteness just real briefly here. Once again, I am repeating myself. So those of you who hear me every week, I'm sorry, but I gotta say it again. And that is, to be white is to be racist. Now, what do I mean by that? Why would I say to be white is to be racist? What I mean is, I'll take my own example. I'm a person of mostly Irish and German extraction. Proud to be vaguely associated with Johann Sebastian Bach. So I'm fine being white in that sense. But what does white mean? I passed a person coming into the station that I know to be of Finnish extraction. So he and I are white. What does that mean? Well, but he's Finnish. And I'm Irish. And these genetic phenotypes, that's redundant, these phenotypes come from vastly different places, and our bodies are quite different. But to say that we are white, to say that I am white in that context, means that I am on the side of the oppressor. Because really, it's about skin color. It's not really about heritage. So there's no such thing as white heritage. Except in that general sense, you come from, if you are white, you come from maybe Polish extraction. You maybe come from English extraction, some combination, combination with people of color, whatever. To say that you're white means that you're on that side of the line. And in this case, the word white, to say that you're white in that context, which is the usual context, means that you are on the side of the oppressing group. It's not really a race. It's a characteristic. And when I say that, I wonder if people are following me on this. I wonder if you get it. I wonder if you understand what I'm saying. There is no such thing as whiteness, really. Not in terms of racial phenotypes. Whiteness is a status. Now, I've used the example from history of Japanese people being granted white status in apartheid South Africa. What do they mean by that? They meant status. They didn't mean that Japanese people looked white or that there was any racial phenotype in common. That wasn't what was happening. So I also want to point out again that thinking this through is very liberating for white people. And using it that way brings up the fact that you can't get around using the word white. And in certain contexts, I mean, especially if you're talking about who's oppressing and who's oppressed, it's accurate. So again, when you hear someone say that to be white is to be racist, that's what they mean. They don't mean that your genes make you racist. They mean your whiteness makes you racist. And what's whiteness? It's a status. Think about it. Let's destroy whiteness. Let's destroy it. What a relief it will be for the world to destroy whiteness. So, from Right Wing Watch, back to headlines. Neo-Nazi leader Andrew Englund plans to muster thousands of poll watchers across all 50 states. His partners at the alt-right website, the Right Stuff, are touting plans to set up hidden cameras at polling places in Philadelphia and hand out liquor and marijuana in the city's ghetto on election day to induce residents to stay home. The National Socialist Movement, various factions of the Ku Klux Klan, and the white nationalist American Freedom Party are all deploying members to watch polls, either informally or, they say, through the Trump campaign. Right Wing Watch also writes the Oath Keepers, a group of former law enforcement and military members that often shows up in public heavily armed, is advising its members to go undercover and conduct intelligence gathering at polling places. And Donald Trump ally Roger Stone is organizing his own exit polling, aiming to monitor thousands of precincts across the country. Energized by Trump's candidacy and alarmed by his warnings of a rigged election, white nationalist, alt-right, and militia movement groups are planning to come out in full force Tuesday, creating the potential for conflict at the close of an already turbulent campaign season. The potential of violence on or around Election Day is very real. That's a quote from Mark Potok of Southern Poverty Law Center. He also says Donald Trump has been telling his supporters for weeks and weeks and weeks now that they're about to have the election stolen from them by evil forces on behalf of the elites. End quote. Skipping forward in the article from Right Wing Watch, Louisiana Senate candidate David Duke, a former KKK grand wizard who supports Trump but is disavowed by a New York businessman in February after some hesitation in a CNN interview, said his supporters plan to monitor polls with an eye towards some of the more inner city areas that he said exhibited suspicious voting patterns in the state's 1991 governor's race. Dog whistle, dog whistle, dog whistle. This didn't come out of nowhere. They write, the Republican Party has for years been attempting to justify voter suppression schemes by claiming that mass voter fraud is swinging elections for Democrats. The subtext of this is often that this voter fraud is happening at the hands of people of color and immigrants. Trump has just made it explicit when he urged his supporters to go out and become poll watchers in other communities that might try to rig the election against him. It's no wonder that this message appeals to racist groups and to the conspiratorial mindset behind the right-wing militia movement. The Texas-based Tea Party group True the Vote already has an independent poll-watching operation set up that has in past years been accused of intimidating voters. True the Vote promotes a steady stream of conspiracy theories about widespread election fraud, recently warning that a flood of illegal voters could swing the 2016 election, and has told its members to look out for polling places staying open late as evidence of fraud. Once again, that was from Right Wing Watch, rightwingwatch.org. Alice Sperry writes, voter suppression is the real election scandal. She writes, the integrity of this year's election is under attack, but not in the way Donald Trump claims it is. This is from The Intercept. 3 years ago, the Supreme Court, she writes, struck down a major section of the Voting Rights Act, opening the doors to new efforts to restrict voting. The impact of that decision will be felt at the polls for some time this year. Measures passed in the aftermath of that decision, restrictive voter ID laws, new requirements for voter registration, cuts to early voting options and polling sites, and other schemes are the real threat to the November 8th vote, according to civil rights advocates. And these procedural obstacles to the polls pose more insidious, large-scale challenges to suffrage than the more egregious and illegal harassment of the sort Trump has repeatedly advocated. Skipping ahead in the article, in 1964, Republican Party lawyers, including future Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist, demanded that Black and Latino voters in Arizona read out sections of the U.S. Constitution to prove their citizenship. And speaking for myself, remember that William Buckley did the same. And his magazine, that was in 64. In 66, a year after the Voting Rights Act was signed into law, white teenagers in Georgia harassed Black voters in line in the polls as police watched. White election officials inspected Black voters' ballots in Alabama, and Mississippi plantation workers were forced to cast their ballots in plantation stores as their bosses watched. The list goes on and on. Fast forward to 2004, when University of Pittsburgh students were held up for hours at the polls as Republican Party lawyers challenged the credentials of pretty much every young voter who showed up. That same year in Harris County, Texas, local police officers showed up at an early voting site and demanded to see IDs, saying anyone with an outstanding warrant would go to jail. In 2012, an organizer with the right-wing poll-watching group True the Vote told volunteer monitors that the voters they targeted should be made to feel like driving and seeing the police following you. That's True the Vote. Civil rights advocates fear that Trump's call for his supporters to watch the polls might lead to more incidents of that nature this year. Flyers circulating on social media have been reminding voters of their rights, calling on anyone experiencing intimidation or obstruction to take photos and report the incident to authorities. And in addition to the parties and campaigns' official poll monitors, which must be pre-registered with local election officials, independent observers will also be watching the polls and fielding calls from voters about any irregularities. One such initiative is the National Lawyers Committee's Election Protection Program, a nonpartisan effort that will dispatch trained monitors to 27 states. The group has also worked to remove barriers to the polls ahead of the vote. It recently filed suit in Virginia after the state's online registration tool crashed, causing eligible voters to miss the deadline, and it successfully fought to extend the registration deadline in North Carolina areas affected by Hurricane Matthew. Kristen Clark, president of the committee, told The Intercept she fears the impact of both those procedural obstacles and the prospect of more blatant harassment. She's quoted saying, "We want a democracy where people feel they are free and able to participate. My hope is that people will not be discouraged and stay at home. That's just not a healthy outcome for our democracy," end quote. Time is 9:15. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. So here's the skinny. We're about to have a general election. Everyone knows that. Here in Oregon, Measure 97 is said to be running close, which means that heavily left Democratic and Green Multnomah County, this county here in Portland, with its burgeoning voter list, will decide the issue. Measure 97 is the effort to mount a small gross receipts tax on very large corporations, $25 million and up, thereby removing Oregon from its place at the very bottom of the 50 states and the District of Columbia. Yeah, we're 51st in levying such taxes. The big corporations have spent tens of millions to defeat the tax, and it's, I'm sure a worthy investment for them. Pluck now from the memory hole what happened in 2014, 2 years ago, to Measure 92. The GMO labeling measure, remember? And last week I was calling it Measure 57 because, senior moment. But the measure failed by a small fraction of 1% of the vote. Statewide, 13,000 votes were rejected for signature irregularities, and thousands of those were in Multnomah County. Remember, too, that voter fraud is a serious crime punishable by prison time. If those votes had been counted, Measure 92, I think, quite likely would have won. But instead, voters had to A, find out somehow that their vote had been rejected, and B, get a document to the elections office with ID to verify their signatures, a surefire method for suppressing the vote. Technically, you can mail your response in, mail-in documents, and get your signature corrected, but then you don't really know that or whether they accepted it. So in actual practice, what it meant was you were no longer a motor voter. You're no longer someone who can use a mail-in ballot. You have to go in person and make damn sure that they actually accept your signature and show ID to show that you are yourself. That sort of folderol is voter suppression. It works. It works by the numbers. Measure 92 supporters rushed to the court for a restraining order. But quoting the Oregonian from the time, two of the 4 points that the supporters had to prove to win the restraining order was that the 4,600 voters in Multnomah County would experience irreparable harm if the process continued, and that the plaintiff was likely to succeed legally in showing that the matching signatures isn't required by state law. So this is a pretty high bar. 44% of the rejected voters did not respond on time, so the measure was defeated by some 812 votes. There was a recount, yes, but the recount was of the ballots that were accepted. Didn't mean a damn thing. But there were enough votes in heavily pro-labeling Multnomah County to put the measure through, in my opinion. Do the math. The measure won, but for rejected ballots. Now comes to the court of public opinion. Measure 97, however you might happen to feel about that, I have requested the names of all persons employed in rejecting ballots in Multnomah County, and the director has provided all 49 of them. That is a lot of people. I am checking the names, and if any appear to be of right-wing vote suppression partisans, I'll pursue that information further. Actually, I am going to be pursuing a little bit of that sort of information. At this point, I can say it would appear that there will again be quite a number of ballots thrown out. In the last presidential election, 1,049 ballots were rejected for non-matching signatures, whereas in the non-presidential 2014 election with a GMO labeling proposition coming up so closely, more than 4,000 were thrown out in Multnomah County. I asked the director of elections why it is. Given that there are no prosecutors for voter fraud, why it is necessary to throw out thousands of ballots in the first place? It seems that it would be more rational, given the circumstances, to throw out ballots only during a recount. His response was that all the election districts throw out ballots on the same protocols and at the same rates. I didn't have the wherewithal to immediately check that response for validity, so I let the claim pass. But he also pointed out that the lawsuit challenge to Measure 92 labeling count had been thrown out. But as I said, it was thrown out on rather narrow and difficult grounds. A preliminary examination of the 49 signature challenges in Multnomah County shows, by and large, a fine and dedicated group of people. I have work to do with the list. But my first observation is simply that setting 49 people to the task of matching every signature is pretty much guaranteed that a lot of votes will be thrown out. And again, I draw your attention to the fact that in a presidential election, 1,000-something votes were thrown out. In the less attended midterm election, 4,600 votes were thrown out in this county, 13,000 statewide. Probably, again, thousands of that was a Freudian slip. I have a nice Freudian slip with some lace here. I almost said thousands of jokes will be challenged, and I've often said your vote is a joke, and this is the sort of thing that I mean. But anyway, probably, again, thousands of votes will be challenged. Your signature changes from day to day, of course, and more significantly, it changes as you age. It changes with illness. It changes with disability. I don't think a signature should be thrown out unless it is clearly unlike its precedent. I also wonder whether members of True the Vote, the active reactionary right-wing election tilters, have gotten into the system. And this is why I want to check that list of vote rejectors. They do have an active Oregon chapter, and I've signed up for their email list hoping to get inside information. I did have a partial list of their members some years ago. I can't locate it now, I'm sorry to say. So I'm seeking that list. And would an examination of the names rejected for non-matching signatures show a predominance, I would like to know, of Hispanic or Black surnames? That's certainly in the intent of the interstate cross-check voter purge list as exposed by journalist Greg Pallast. I have noticed rather racist tendencies in one of the signature rejection crew, and I'm just starting to check through them. There may be more, but as I said, there's 49 of them. And that was the big news. When I pressed the director of elections, I believe his name is Tim, here in Multnomah County, for the information, I found that he gave me a current list. He believes in transparency, he says. And there are 49 people checking signatures. They are going to check every single signature very, very carefully. And this is going to have, whether it is intended by him or not, I think it's intended by someone. This is going to have an effect that we'll be able to say that some squiggle in thousands of signatures does not match. And so thousands of votes that should be counted are not going to be counted. I'm warning you now. This is one reason you must vote. You must vote now and you must vote early. Even if you agree with me that voting in this country is a corrupt, diluted scam intended to keep us from real power, even a diluted gesture is better than silence. So if you want to be counted, you must check to see if your vote was counted. You're not finished. When your ballot's accepted, you must vote in time to check. Sign up for the vote check program on the website, and if your ballot isn't taken, you must confront the system in person. Do not accept a provisional ballot. They aren't counted. So that is my summary of what is happening with votes. I did promise that I would follow up. This is my follow-up so far, and I can see that there's a great deal of work to be done. But again, to the discovery, so far as I'm concerned, the interesting thing about looking into vote rejection in Multnomah County is that there are 49 people signed up to check votes, and yes, they're going to check every single one of them. They throw out hundreds because people forget to sign at all. Now, I won't argue with that. If you didn't sign your ballot, then you're not going along with the ballot by mail system properly. You goofed, you screwed up, your ballot's going to get thrown out, but it does have a unique barcode. So again, if you think you might have forgotten to sign, check. Ask the Multnomah County Elections Office. They have a website. This being the internet age, you or someone who does internet can look it up really quickly. See if your vote counted, because once again, some of your votes aren't going to count. And it is going to have an effect on the election. Now, I said that I would get back to the situation at Standing Rock. And to that end, I want to quote a public letter by Winona LaDuke, Anne Wright, and Zoltan Grossman. It's published in counterpunch.org, and I don't have time to read the whole thing. They write, "So you joined law enforcement." This is addressed to law enforcement at Standing Rock at the North Dakota Access, the Dakota Access Pipeline. They write, "So you joined law enforcement or the National Guard because you wanted to uphold the law, protect innocent civilians against the bad guys, and help your community in times of need. Instead, they're having you blockade unarmed people who are trying to hold a prayer vigil, chasing them with armored vehicles and ATVs, raiding their teepees and sweat lodges at gunpoint, and shooting them and their horses with pepper spray, concussion grenades, tasers, rubber bullets. You thought you'd be the cop of the beat or the citizen soldier, and they've made you into the cavalry, riding in with Custer. If you signed up for the National Guard, you swore a solemn oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. This is a good time to read the text of that Constitution, including the First Amendment that prohibits abridging the free exercise of religion, or the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 6 of the Constitution defines all treaties made, including those with native nations, as the supreme law of the land." And this is where I would depart from the text of this document and point out that that's a solemn vow, and it's talking about very important things, especially freedom of speech and the right of the people peaceably to assemble. And this is exactly what First Nations have done. They have peaceably assembled. They have been very specific and active in being sure that they are all unarmed. They have peaceably assembled. And when you get thousands of people together to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances, it's because there's a grievance. So that makes it pretty important. So whether the grievance is legitimate or not, in any given case, the Constitution wants this to be taken very seriously. How seriously, you might ask? Well, I would say so seriously, far more seriously than one should take the profits of an already filthy rich corporation. Corporation wants more profits by pushing through the pipeline. Well, okay, we do that in our capitalist system. We allow that to happen, but obviously, petitioning the government for redress of grievances is more important. We don't see enshrined in the Constitution the right to make an immediate short-term profit. Returning to the text of the document by Winona LaDuke et al., the religious rights of Native people are further enshrined in the Indian Religious Freedom Act and the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, both of which have been literally plowed under by the Dakota Access Pipeline. Energy Transfer Partners and Enbridge even hired private security goons who on September 3rd unleashed attack dogs on Native people praying to petition the government for redress of grievances. On October 27th, praying people holding tobacco and sage had their arms stomped until they released the offerings. Impersonal numbers were written on the arms of the arrestees, who were held in dog kennels. Genuine law enforcement or military wouldn't take sides or turn a blind eye to these shameful violations of constitutional rights, but protect the lives and property of all residents, whether Native or non-Native. If you deny others their humanity, you lose your own humanity, they say, addressing the troops. And they are troops. You can call them police. But when are police not police? When they show up in military gear. Returning to the text, yes, some of the water protectors are trespassing on private property and locking themselves to pipeline construction equipment. Their actions are part of a long tradition of nonviolent civil disobedience in the face of tyranny, from Henry David Thoreau to Martin Luther King Jr. Remember the Boston Tea Party, in which rebellious Americans posing as Indians took direct action against British tea taxes. The only real difference at Standing Rock is that they're not posing as Indians. When we visited there, they write, we met many prayerful people who are justifiably angry. What if an explosive oil pipeline or train threatened your home, your drinking water, or your kids' school? Yes, many of the water protectors are from out of state, but they were invited by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe with one of the conditions that they don't have weapons. The state of North Dakota has invited out-of-state armed police and unaccountable private security thugs all to defend a corporation from Texas. Some of the people have come as far as Ohio and Wisconsin, and what self-respecting Packers fan would side with a corporate franchise based in Dallas? Why is it that armed white militia members from out of state and uninvited are acquitted in Oregon, but invited unarmed Native people are being criminalized and assaulted in North Dakota? And Winona Duke et al. Write, the trend of state security forces being turned into private corporate security is hardly unique to North Dakota. And the article goes on for many, many paragraphs. But it's time for me to wrap this up and say that you have been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And I hope that you will stay tuned because Per Fogring is coming up. And he will have quite an interesting show. And the morning broadcast will continue here on KBOO Portland 90.7 in Cascadia, other frequencies in the area, and via KBOO.fm, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.